Blog Talk Radio.
Live from the nation's capital, it's the Power of Poetics, the DC Poetry Project's open mic call-in show.
And one man in his time may play many parts. His act begins in seven stages. At first, the infant, mewling and puking in the nurse's arms. Then, the schoolboy, with his satchel and shining morning face, creeping like snail, unwilling to school. And then the lover, sighing like a furnace with a woeful ballad made to his mistress's eyebrow. Then a soldier, full of strange oaths and bearded like a pard, jealous in honor, sudden and quick in quarrel, seeking the bubble reputation. Even in the cannon's mouth, and then the justice in fair round belly with good capon line. With eyes severe and beard of formal cut, full of wise saws and modern instances, and so he plays his part. The sixth age shifts into the lean and slippered pantaloon, with spectacles on nose and pouch on side, his youthful hold well saved a world too wide, for his shrunk shank and his big manly voice, turning again toward childish treble pipes and whistles in his sound. Last of all, that is the end of his strange eventful history, his second childishness and mere oblivion, sans teeth, sans eyes, sans taste, sans everything. Hello, everyone. That was William Shakespeare. His play As You Like It, Act 2, Scene 7, All the World's a Stage. I'd like to bring you greetings from the nation's capital. My name is Michael Anthony Ingram. This is the Power of Poetics, and every week we attempt to provide a forum for individuals to share, to express, to live their poetry. I think it's a unique forum, and over the course of the last year, we've had an opportunity to really hear and listen to a number of different fantastic poets. So again, this is the Power of Poetics, and we'll be right back. We are back again. My name is Michael Anthony Ingram. The call-in number is 646-716-8754. If you'd like to tweet us, it's at DC Poetry Project. We, over the course of last year, have received a number of tweets from people around the world, including Afghanistan, if you can believe it, and Santa Barbara, a number of different places. So what I'd like to do is open the lines. We're not going to wait any further. to hear voices from around the nation and the world. This is the Power of Poetics. I'm going to open the lines. Eric O 256, you're on the air.
Hey, Michael, how you doing?
I'm quite well, Gary. How are you?
I'm good. Chilling.
Good. On this what?
I was just enjoying this beautiful, wonderful Wednesday afternoon.
Oh, fantastic. It was raining here last night really badly, and today was relatively overcast, but still it's a good day. A good day when you're able to walk and you're able to share and you're living. It's a good day. Do you have any poems for us tonight, Gary from Alabama, or would you like me to recite another one?
Yeah, I have some. I'm the only one. Anybody else in line?
No, we're the only two right now.
Okay, all right. I'm going to read this piece called One Day Away from Heartache. Ready?
Yes, sir.
Breaking news. Love is just as addictive as meth. And I'm like Walter White, Breaking Bad. Caught up 3 times in the same web of deceit. Putting up with Professor X, playing mind games. It's just as vicious attempting to be faithful to a cheat. After leaving and trying to keep me at arm's length, as she chased another brother and wanted me to chase her, be her just-in-case ex-lover, through text, I asked the question, open up Pandora's box, and out jumped Jack, the hidden truth. To be exact, this ex-chick never really loved me. Extra, I'm so done with this ex-mess, an ex-wife who is just too extra to be a new wife. Since the day I found out I became her ex for the last time, released from her clutches, Miss Thing is now an X factor. Like a mathematician, it's time for me to do some subtraction and remove the residues of heartache from this broken love equation. Without cherishing any memories, Miss X has moved on. X minus I equals Y, not you. Do the same and move on. Forget those things which are behind and wondering what, when, and why. Does it really matter who was to blame or even who's the new flame? Remember, karma comes in all shapes and disguises and accessorized with unseen X-rated drama, but that's not important either. Wishing any X the best is best, for it leaves no excuse for a bitterness. Instead, reach forth to what it is and what it is to come. Toward the prize, move forward, anticipating great expectation, and thank God that each new day is another day away from Miss X heartache.
Very powerful piece, Gary. I mean, there's a lot in there that I could ask about. Talk about your inspiration. I mean, I guess I could pull some things out myself, but tell us
almost
more.
It's pretty, yes, it is actually. But it's almost definitely. But no, I wrote it after a breakup with an ex that we had. Like I said, we had been through that 3 times, and that was the last time. And I wrote that piece to dedication of my ex heartache, not her per se, but Heartache in general.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Heartache is a terrible thing, my friend. It's a terrible thing.
Yeah, but it's a learning too. It could be a learning too, a very resourceful learning too, if we endure the end of it. Because heartache ain't forever.
Heartache ain't forever. Well, you know what I'm going to do now? I'm going to play a piece as we, again, have an international audience. And this is a piece called Marcher la nuit dans l'amour. It's in French. And then afterwards, I will share the English translation. And it's about love. Here we go.
marche la nuit dans une ville italienne, que tu la vois devenir magicienne. Marche la nuit dans Paris, que tu la vois sortir de son lit. Marche la nuit dans le vent qu'il apaise tes esprits. Marche la nuit dans un champ qu'il révèle la fraîcheur de son sang. Marche la nuit en forêt, que le bruit de son silence ne t'effraie. Marche la nuit dans tes rêves, tel un arbre coulant de sève. Et marche la nuit dans l'amour qu'il t'emmène voir le jour.
Man, I love French, boy. I think it's one of the most beautiful languages, romance languages. I mean, I love French. And the translation of that piece is On the Night in Love.
Speak French?
Just a little bit. Just a little bit. Oui. Oui, bonjour. C'est la vie. C'est la vie. Where is the whiskey? Okay. So, here's the piece in English. Again, it's called On the Night in Love. And it's a duet with Johnny Hallyday. If I ever get lost, if ever I take water, open my door. Love can catch cold if you do reverse. Okay, I'm going to go back. Ouvre la porte. Close the door. Because love can catch cold if you do reverse. If you regret all these words, for the dead of winter, love can catch cold. If you want much, my heart and my body until dawn leaves me more like that all night. Love can catch cold. If ever one falls asleep, in our little comfort, we change port. Love can catch cold. If you drive north, we leave our decor, then burn. Love can catch cold. If we ever get out and I see you again, then even if he is not already dead, love can catch cold. If you want much, my heart and my body until dawn. Let me go over me all night outside. Love can catch cold. If you want to take the air, if we want to change skin, close the door. All right.
How you speak I in French?
Say I?
Yeah.
Je. J-E.
Je.
Yeah. Like, je suis, like, je suis is I am. So if you say je suis, yeah, je suis.
Zoo.
Who?
I is zoo.
I is je, J-E.
Zoo. Zoo. Zoo.
No. Huh? Je. Like, it's like a J. Je.
Okay. But it's pronounced like where it's said, like, okay, Jew. Okay, J, Jew.
Yeah.
Reason I had okay. that, I got a piece that got, I just wrote this too. It got three French phrases in it, and I can't speak French
for
a flip. All
right. Yeah. All right.
And I can't speak French with a flip. But I wanted to put these French phrases in it to compliment. I would try to do it.
Go ahead, please.
Whenever it's my turn again.
Yeah. Well, let's see. I mean, since we're on a groove right here in terms of French, man, please read your piece. It's just you and I for right now.
Okay. This piece is called Midnight. And mind you, when I get to the French part, I'm telling you now. I'm just gonna try my best.
Yeah.
So
go ahead.
Okay.
Don't worry about it. You're amongst friends.
All right. Midnight was befitting for her, for it fit her well. Neatly trimmed jet black hair, starry green eyes, bright as a full moon. dark like midnight and sweet as chocolate. Her love was like voodoo that cast a spell on me. See, we met on an Amtrak train on a road to the Crescent City. Having shared kindred vibes, we vibed in the French quarters while she spoke French to me. Je t'adore. I adore you. Tu es pour moi la plus belle. You are, for me, the most beautiful. Je veux être avec toi. I want to be with you. Hot and spicy like Creole seasoning, she was a delicious cuisine that my gator couldn't wait to taste. Strolling down Bourbon Street, drinking shots of bourbon and sipping hurricanes at a bar that survived Katrina. She said her real name was Katrina. And a quiet storm was brewing inside of me. When she whispered in my ear that she wanted a sex on the beach, just as I was about to order, she said no. A boat would do. So we hopped on a small dinner cruise boat and cruised the currents down the Mississippi. Having slipped inside the cabin, the captain's empty cabin, I felt like a pirate and she was my sexy hostage. She asked me if I would play with her cat. Her pretty ebony kitten purred and meowed every time I stroked it. After releasing her tame friend from her cage to go relieve herself, when she came back, we locked the door and giggled as my hand slid between her moist thighs. And I felt her lip was plump as a pink, juicy shrimp, and my tongue wanted to nibble it. But no more time for foreplay. We went straight at it. See, when she spread eagle, I wanted to salute her iconic treasure. And my crocodile went swimming deep in her mushy, wet swamp. Half naked, we quietly swayed in rhythm, locked in a sexual salsa dance. The sounds of the jazz band drowned out soft meows and muffled groans and moans. As our lip locked and tongue enjoyed a passionate kiss, the sweat of her breasts mixed with the sweat off my chest. We stood up, her sick blouse wet and my polo wet. Enjoying my gait on the stick, I was feeding her snapping turtle till we almost got caught just as I spilled my tiny baby maker. Trina whispered, look, you got Midnight all upset. I said, girl, that's it you got there. And I stared at those green eyes tattooed just below her navel button. And I jokingly asked, you carry that cat everywhere you go? She said, you keep your gator with you, don't you? But hungry, she put up my po' boy and we left the boat to go get two po' boys. And then we laughed and headed back to the Amtrak.
You put your foot in that poem, bro.
What do you think about it?
I think it's great. I mean, in terms of the visuals, you could see it. I mean, you know, one of the things I'm planning to do, we're going to do a night of erotic poetry. It'll be late at night. But that's the kind of work I want people to share, man. It doesn't have to be explicit, but through the images you can tell what's happening. How you feel about that?
Right. And to me, that's what truly, it's a line between porn and erotica. And
yeah.
I like, to me, erotica is taking a person there without getting too graphic, you know.
Right.
You know, let the reader and the metaphors fill in the imagination and the mind.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, here's an example of what I'd like this show to hopefully sound like. This is called Erotica Poetry.
Uh-huh, yeah. Macusa, Senorita Bonita, I want the Bonita. Bon Appetita, from your kitchen to your vita. Welcome to the Bone Buffet. All you can eat. Don't be a vegan for one night. You must eat meat.
Hammer.
I like sweet and sour chicken from your great wall. I like tomboys, girls who like to play football. Without Viagra, your Niagara Falls. You picked a good man, a blue chip investment. My stock bounces back like resurrections. My expectations for you to be strong and have to speak it in tongues. With you, I want to play fight in the dark. We'll call it mixed martial arts and see if we can win each other's hearts. For you, I want to be the sun, causing your waters participation in condensation. Your peppermint patty, I want to be tasting. Ooh, what a cool sensation.
Hammer.
You got me saying, Ule ukuse lakiswa or whatever. I'm just sprung. I want you speaking in tongues.
All right. All right. That was erotica poetry. What do you think?
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, well, like I said again, I want to have a show or put on a show where that type of poetry, including what you shared, is what we discuss, what we do, you know, to give people that kind of an outlet as well. So what I'd like to do is take a quick break. We'll be right back with the Power of Poetics. My name is Michael Anthony Ingram. We're here with our guest, Gary from Alabama, Superstar Gary. We'll be right back. We are back. As you know, if you've been with us over the course of the past year, our breaks are very short, but it does give us an opportunity to kind of breathe just a little bit, if it's only for 30 seconds. What I'd like to do is share a piece by James Whitcomb Riley. It is called The Best is Good Enough. I quarrel not with destiny, but make the best of everything. The best is good enough for me. Leave discontent alone, and she will shut her mouth and let you sing. I quarrel not with destiny. I take some things or I let them be. Good girl has always got the ring. The best is good enough for me. Since fate insists on secrecy, I have no arguments to bring. I quarrel not with destiny. The fella that goes hard for G will find that he hasn't got full swing. The best is good enough for me. One only knows our needs, and he does all the distributing. I quarrel not with destiny. The best is good enough for me. And that was written in 1916. Very powerful to me. Piece of poetry. To not quarrel with destiny. The best is good enough. Gary? Are you there? Gary, are you there?
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. I had my mic. Yeah. Yeah, I'm here. I have my mic muted.
Okay, all
yeah,
right.
Yeah, I was just
then.
Basically repeating as she was reading that. That was a very astonishing piece.
Yeah, it was. It was. It was. It was very empowering and very real, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have another one for us?
Yes, I do. And
okay.
This piece is called Walking Dead.
All right.
The Plight of the Homeless. And I just wrote it today, too. The streets are cold, even when they're hot. Various types of shoes walking to and fro, carrying heartless souls to their destination. Never concerned at the empty park benches, the vacant bus stop rest pavilions, an abandoned house or building, a warm vent in a trashy alleyway that reeks of feces and urine are all somebody's temporary home. Hairy nostrils and cigarette smoke-filled lungs lurk with disdain at the infectious stench of improper personal hygiene. With each passing vehicle, the crowded asphalt breathes contempt. With each wayward step, the sidewalk spits scorn and shame at the hopelessness whose sole companions are loneliness, failing health, angry, fiending addictions, mental illnesses, all of the above. Devoid of love and compassion, they are invisible to the well-to-do rich, blind to the middle class and ghosts to the poor, especially those who are one paycheck, one late mortgage away from being far too close to walking in the shadows of street zombies. Night falls on the head of the walking dead, orphaned by a dead relative, or dead after mourning the loss of a dead-end career, unemployed and gave up, dead broke and exhausted from trying to resurrect a dead marriage, or long-forgotten parents treated like dead terrorists by abandoned children, or physically dying bodies and later found dead under a bridge or a dark tunnel, are dead tired from struggling with the dilemma of dealing with health issues like diabetic, hypertension, congestive heart failure, HIV, or walking pneumonia. Walking instead of choosing to search for employment, an empty bed at a local shelter, begging for a morsel of food or hustling for a fix, a drink, or to turn a trick. It ain't easy to sleep on a concrete cot, knowing that the last thing one had on their paper plate or pallet was a thrown-away half-eaten sandwich found in a dumpster while chasing away the rats, or the nasty semen from a stranger's dick. It's enough to make a healthy man or woman sick, now, isn't it? Even the cops quit arresting those that are relieved to spend a night in jail. To get a cold shower, a half-decent happy meal, potted meat and stale crackers, only to enjoy a temporary haven from a daily home deep within the city of hell. Next time, don't be so quick to judge the stories behind weathered hands asking, can you please spare a dime? Or the homeless, I will work for food. Signs. At the end of their journey, who really cares? Who will remember them? Who will claim their cold decaying corpse? Who will put a mark on their unmarked graves? Who really gives a damn who they are or how they became? Never mind whether by bad decisions, unwanted circumstances, even the consequences of their actions, don't they deserve a good life, sleep? Now tell me, nightly, who will help the walking dead rest in peace?
You know, it's funny, It's a beautiful, beautiful poem and quite timely because one of our initiatives actually last year was called Finding the Visible in the Invisible, where we work with the homeless population. Because so often, if you are homeless and or unhoused, you do feel invisible. People see you, but they don't see you. Pretty much as you said, pretty much walking dead. And so what we attempted to do was look for the series of libraries where we offered programs to talk about the five senses, to make sure that people still held on to those five senses, because, again, you can feel deadened to life, and you can feel deadened to those things that are going on around you. So, again, a very timely piece, Gary. Beautiful. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome. I was inspired to write that after listening to an episode of Fresh Air on NPR yesterday when they was interviewed the doctor that was helping out. He was a doctor to the homeless. His job was to go out on the streets and attend to the homeless people. And after listening to that episode, and it gave me a very insight of the homeless, you know, and I'm like, wow. And that was the inspiration behind that piece.
Right, right. I understand. We're going to come right back. We do have another caller, one of our favorite people. We're going to come back in about 30 seconds. This piece is called, really quickly, Playful Children. Like to open up the lines to our next caller, area code 860.
Hello, Michael.
860. Hello, Valerie. Valerie, how are you tonight?
Staying dry.
Okay.
Is it raining in D.C.?
It rained last night really badly.
But it's not raining too badly there?
No, not tonight. It rained badly last night, but not tonight.
Oh,
right.
We are flooded here in Maine.
Oh, wow. Well, we're glad you're with us for safety. All right?
Yes.
Okay. Gary is also on the line.
Hey, Gary.
Hey, how are you?
I'm fine.
You too. You two are my favorite people.
Looking at your posts every day, and I never say hello to you. I have to change that.
The what?
I have to say hello to you more.
Oh, well, hello, Valerie.
Hello.
Wow. We've got Maine and Alabama on the line. So, again, this is a national show. So, Valerie, would you like
yes.
to share anything, or you want to listen, or whatever you'd like to do, do it.
I have enough time to read one poem because we're having power outages here, so I can't stay on the phone for a long time
okay.
because of the storm, but I thought this was apropos for tonight. It's one of your favorites. It's called Flood. We are flooded here in Maine, and even though this poem is about spring, it's fall now, but it's called Flood. Black wetness slowly creeps, places it should not be. The waves gently lapping are deceiving as they damage. And
would you recite it? One more, I was getting into it, Valerie, and you were done. So we.
Yes, I know. Okay. Flood. Black wetness slowly creeps places it should not be. The waves gently lapping are deceiving as they damage.
The waves gently laughing are deceiving as they damage. Wow.
Yes.
I mean, that is correct. Because the waves don't know that they're destroying someone's life or property. They're dancing.
They're just doing what they do.
They do what they do. Wow, that's very powerful. And, yes, I do like that. And it is apropos because, as you said, it's bad in Maine right now.
I hope you're not going to get this, Gary. I hope the rain's not coming your way.
We hadn't got any so far.
Oh, good, good. No, we're getting a ton of it here, so I got to go.
All right, then. Well, hey, Valerie,
everyone, have a good night.
Thank you so much for signing on. It always makes my day. Thank you. All right. Talk to you later.
Bye, Michael. Bye, Gary.
Hi, you have a good night.
All right. Gary, it's just you and I, buddy, tonight, but I think we're hanging in there. I think we're hanging in there. I'd like to recite a piece by Claude McKay, who lived from 1890 to 1948, and it's called America. And it's so funny. One of our programs, we attend an open mic at this restaurant called Bossa Bistro. And it's an open mic. And when you read somebody else's poetry, they term it OPP, other people's poetry. So tonight, my part of this will be in the OPP format, another person's poetry. All right, this is Claude McKay, and the piece is called America. Although she feeds me bread of bitterness and sinks into my throat her tiger's tooth, stealing my breath of life, I will confess, I love this cultured hell that tests my youth. Her vigor flows like tides into my blood, giving me strength erect against her hate. Her bigness sweeps my being like a flood, yet as a rebel fronts a king in state. I stand within her walls with not a shred of terror, malice, nor word of jeer. Darkly I gaze into the days ahead and see her might and granite wonders there. Beneath the touch of time's unerring hand, like priceless treasures sinking in the sand.
Mm.
Claude McKay, you know, was a part of the Harlem Renaissance.
Yeah, he sure was.
Yeah. So there are a lot of possibilities in this poem to think about water, think about floods, as Valerie shared. So I think it's all in line with what we're doing tonight. Do you have another one, Gary, or I can find an OPP?
Yeah, go ahead and find another one, another OPP. Let me.
Okay. All right. This one is kind of long, but it's by someone named Alice Fulton, and she was born in 1952, and the piece is You Can't Rum Boogie in a Ball and Chain, written in
1980. You can't what? Rum Boogie in a Ball and Chain.
Yeah, and it was written for Janis Joplin.
Oh, okay.
You call the blues loose black belly lover, and in Port Arthur they called you pig face. The way you chug booze straight without a glass, your brass-ass language slingbacks with jewel heels, proclaimed you no kin to their muzzle blood, no chiclet-toothed Baptist boyfriend for you. Strung out, street hustling, showed men wouldn't buy you. Once you clung to the legs of a lover, let him drag you till your knees turn to blood, mouth hardened to a thin scar on your face, cracked under song screams never left to heal, little girl blue, soul pressed against the glass. That voice rasping like you guzzled fiberglass, stronger than the four-armed men behind you, but a pale horse lured you, docile to heel. Warm snow flank pillowed you like a lover. Men feared the black holes in your body and face, knew what they put in would return as blood. Craving fast cars, garish's fresh blood, dinners with flies and donuts under glass, for Michael bars and a surface gold face, in nameless motels after sign-off, You let TV's blank, bright stare play lover. Lay still, convinced its cobalt rays could heal. Your songs that sound ground under some stud's heel, swallowed and coughed up in a voice like blood. Translation unavailable, lover. No prince could shoe you in unyielding glass. Stories of exploding pumpkins bored you, who flaunted tattooed breast and hungry face. That night, needing a sweet-legged sugar face, a hot, sky-eyed southern comfort to heal, the hurt of senior proms for all but you, plain Janis Lynn, self-hatred laced your blood. You knew they worshipped drain works, emptied glass, legends like Gang Bang, the wildest lover. Like clerks, we face your image in the glass, suggest lovers as accessories, heels. It's your shade, this blood dress, we say, it's you. And that was written for Janis Joplin.
She's a very interesting, fascinating lady.
Yes, she was. You know, and she's part of that crew that all died at the age of 27. You know, due to hard living, as well as a number of other different things. All right, my friend, you're on.
Okay.
Well, I do
all
have
right.
some. Okay, all right.
Go ahead. You do have what?
I've got some clips that I could play as you get ready.
You can go ahead. Okay, play a clip then.
Okay, all right. This is one that I found. I think it's a really, really nice one. It's called I'm Taking My Ball and Going Home, and the person who recited it, his name is Scott. Hold on 1 second. Here we go.
Was infamous for ruining Sunday morning full-tackle football. He was the only kid in our neighborhood with an NFL regulation pigskin. He was short, stocky, with greasy blonde hair and rosy cheeks. He looked like a grown toddler. He sat in the back of class Monday through Friday, unwanted and unnoticed. But Sunday morning, he was a hero, a champion, self-appointed star quarterback. You'd have thought he came from money. And every Sunday, it was the same thing. If we didn't play by his rules, he'd shout at the top of his lungs, "You're not listening! I'm taking my ball and going home!" He just wanted to be taken seriously. You see, he sat in the back of class Monday through Friday, unwanted and unnoticed. He was fat, ugly, unpopular, and reminded of it with every ring of the bell. Every uninvited party, every snicker, every whisper, every empty lunch table, and every unanswered prayer. Every fat joke, and every botched Hail Mary and failed button hook. He is what we all are when our pride is exposed for the costume that it is. Scott, you are a poem. 20 years later, you are a poem. I listen to the sound of your mirror crackling. Watched you claw for higher ground when the clouds opened up to flood your heart so you couldn't breathe. Watched you drown at the bottom of a bottle during fourth period. Scott, we thought it was funny then. And I want to tell you now that I felt like that too. Bottomless and alone. And I wish I could have told you then that you weren't. That you couldn't have been in better company if Christ had gotten down and offered you space on his crucifix. And sometimes when people aren't listening to me, I feel like shouting at the top of my lungs, "You're not listening! I'm taking my ball and going home!" Sometimes I feel like people only listen when I'm being destructive, so I speak with a poison in my tongue and choke on my own cries for help. When you're alone, your intestines feel like a wet sailor's boat. Scott, they don't understand people like us. Why small things mean so much. So I write. I turn our playgrounds into coliseums. Down 6 points with 4 inches. I give purple hearts for skinned knees and broken spirits. And raise monuments for those of us that were ignored. I make this mic my fucking football. And the stage is an empty field, vacant of what defines youth. And I put storm clouds in number two pencils, disguise my scars as poems. I take the weight out of your chest and put it on my shoulders. And then I take all of my fears and put them on blank pieces of paper for you, Scott. Because you just wanted to be heard. And I just want people to listen. And if they don't, then fuck it. I'll just take my ball and go home.
All right. I'm taking my ball and I'm going home. I think, Gary, I mean, what can you say? The power of listening, the power of active listening is so incredible that we do live in a world where it's very difficult to take the time out to truly listen to another person, to engage them in conversation. As you had an opportunity, as in your poem, you talked about the homeless. Who listens? And sometimes, as the young man stated, destructive things occur as a consequence of that. And I'm going to share this real poem, a little short one, really quickly. And it kind of fits into the theme of someone needing someone to listen to her as she struggles with the situation. And it's called a bleeding problem, cutting. And it's by it's an anonymous poem.
Cut one, cut two, cut three. When will they be free from the monsters in their heads rather than the ones under their beds? The voices scream and throw a fit. Do it, do it, let the blood run from your wrist. Every thought in a twist. They feel so alone. Through each cut, pain is shown. But they keep it hidden from everyone. When the secret is out, they have to run. All of them have a reason for these actions, and the ones who don't understand show hurtful reactions. And they're left feeling numb, the constant pain they want to overcome. Grab the razor, screams a voice. You no longer have a choice. But they do. No matter the situation, it's true. With hope and support, they can make it. It's an addiction that can be quit. Depression and self-harm is serious. Time to tell society is enough. Why be so quick to judge when you can listen to someone in a serious condition? Help save a life. Help them drop the razor, the knife. Who knows, you could save too. Just like Kimia Dawson said, if you want to cut yourself, remember that I love you.
That's one of those things we don't often think about, cutting. Young people cutting themselves. Allowing the blood to flow. Go ahead, sorry.
That reminds me of when I worked at Bradford, this rehab facility, and these kids, they used to cut themselves. And I saw that girl doing that when she was reading that piece, and it took me back to that place.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have another caller, so what I'd like to do is to take a short little break, and we'll come back and introduce the person, and we'll keep on going. Michael Anthony Ingram, I'd like to welcome you to the Power of Poetics, our weekly open mic show. Again, the call-in number is 646-716-8754. I'd like to introduce someone who's on the line right now. I'm going to buzz them in and say hello. Area code 202, you're on the line. The first letter is 24. First number is 24.
Hi. Yes, hi, this is Sister Joy.
Hello.
Sorry. Sorry I had to join late, but I definitely did not want to miss tonight's session. Always good to be back.
Oh, wow. It's good to have you, Sister Joy. Our other person on the line is Gary from Alabama. Gary, this is Sister Joy. She's one of the leaders in D.C. and Maryland in terms of the arts, in terms of poetry. She's a phenomenal woman, and we're glad to have her on the line.
Hey, how you doing, Sister Joy?
Doing well, thank you.
All right. Sister Joy, you were saying, though, I cut you off. I apologize.
No, that's okay. I was just saying that when I joined in, I was hearing about the homelessness, and actually I had a poem that I wanted to share addressing that issue if the time was such that I could.
Yes, please.
Okay. Well, the poem is simply titled My Sister. I saw you today, my sister, with that soiled towel draped about your bowed head. You sat silently next to your possessions, each piece meticulously wrapped in plastic, tucked neatly inside your wire-wheeled cart that blocked the aisle of the 6:15 evening rush hour train. I was one of the passengers who painstakingly navigated past you, as much avoiding your loosely loaded debris as eye and body contact. Every day I ride the same train from my home to my job and back again. I was on my way home. Where were you headed? With no home to call your own? Which stop is yours? How many others passed up the seat next to you like I did? As I strained not to see your pain, I became filled with feelings of complicity. Am I really straining not to see the reality of how much your shopping cart violates my comfort zone? What zone do you call home? What place, time, and space do you claim? Is your home that space inside each of us that wrenches when we see your wretchedness? If you looked into our eyes, would we empathize, buy, or recoil in fear? Is that why you keep your head bowed, to hide the horror that we can neither stand nor understand? Or would your eyes reveal realities of a peace transcended from a place foreign to us? Homelessness splits wide chasm of sisterhood that should be ours. Your life is no less significant in the universe than mine. Although you travel a different path, we share the same time, virtually the same space. You are my equal in the sense of our humanity, and many care more than can express that you are caught in this madness. We perceive to be your life. $500 can't fix what we fear most, the reality that our biweekly paychecks only slightly remove us from your world in a way that is tenuous at best. I ask you, my sister, did you grow weary of the world, or was it snatched from you? Can you teach me how and where to begin to help bring healing and wholeness, to help find an end to your dilemma and mine? I ask your forgiveness as I sit comfortably three rows back and struggle to steady my gaze, struggle to not look away. Forgive me, my sister, as I struggle to learn not to persecute the victim, but the crime. Forgive me as I struggle to swallow this lump in my throat that won't let me digest all the garbage that's been heaped on my sister, who's learned, been forced to survive a life on the street.
Sister Joe, I don't know what to say. I can see every image. I can see that person. I can see that person, Sister Joy. Gary, do you have any comments? Because I'm sorry, please.
Yeah,
sorry.
I was. It was very resonant of what my poem, and I saw that sister, that lady on this train. I saw that the imagery was so powerful and so, and it, you know, I that piece was very, very profound and very, very moving and touching. You know, like
Thank you.
Said, I did see, and it sums up what I was saying. Next time we see a homeless person, after writing and listening, and, you know, we have to be compassionate enough to understand there's their stories behind, as opposed to,
yes,
and make them visible to us, as opposed to just strutting them off or strutting them away, even
exactly.
even in our consciousness.
Yes.
Sister Joy, any more thoughts from you? I mean, I'm thunderstruck. I have really enjoyed the way that you read it in terms of emphasizing the words to help me personally, to pull me into the story, to pull me into that person's lived experience. That was great.
Well, thank
you. When did you write that?
Actually, I wrote this poem in 2001, and it's a poem that I seldom share. For whatever reason, I came in on the call late, and this was the poem that I thought I wanted to share. And then when I heard what was being shared, I said, okay, that's affirmation enough for me. I will definitely share this poem. And it's been years, it's been literally years since I shared that poem.
Well, let me ask this question. Why did you not share it? I mean, it's truth. Why did you not share it?
Well,
why did you choose
well,
to share
no,
it?
Well, no, it's that there was a time when I shared it a lot.
Okay.
And I was very passionate about this word being heard. And then I just started to feel that, it doesn't, the point is not to hit anybody over the head with the message. Once they receive it, it's up to them to do with it what they will or won't. But when I realized that I haven't really done anything with this piece for so long, this was a piece that I thought I wanted to share, and it was just further confirmed when I came online and heard what I heard.
All right. Well, hey, you know, that's a fantastic place for us to end tonight. I think the whole show just came together in terms of synergy, synchronicity, blessings, you name it. We've got about 90 seconds, and I just want to end and say thank you to Sister Joy for coming on. I want to say thank you for Gary for always being my partner in crime here on this radio show. So I'd like to say goodnight to everyone, to all our listeners around the world. The Power of Poetics, every week, Wednesday night at 8 o'clock. Take care, good people. Goodbye.
Good night, Michael. Good night.
Good night, everyone.